Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I always on television watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's all I watch.
And she's from Bolton.
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherGazette.com publisher Ryan Burns. And we welcome you guys back to what will end up being one of our most downloaded to viewed episodes of the entire season. As we sit here recording, we are a week out when your Gopher football team kicks off their 2026 season. So, Luke, it's time to go through the schedule, give our win predictions. But before we even get there, I think we should probably thank the people who showed up earlier this week.
Oh, without question. What a good showing. Launchpad down in Prior Lake. It was so fun to interface with a number of those Gopher fans. We filled the room. You know, everybody was happy. A great location. Everybody walked away with a free hour of play. Man, what a great evening. It was just really fun. And I am sitting here very confident. If you haven't listened to this episode yet, I think I'm going to win.
Yeah, we did our All Big Ten Honors draft. I was kind of heartbroken that Luke sniped me on a few different picks. So if you haven't already, I would pause this episode, go watch or listen to that one, come back to this one, and then you can kind of see who we're high on and who maybe were a little bit different on your thoughts and feelings about. So, yeah, it was a great time down at Launchpad. I'm so glad that Daniel House was able to join us for the sixth consecutive season, which I'm not entirely sure how we've been doing it that long, but that's where it, as we get into this episode, which again, win prediction, season preview, game by game, it is such a fascinating season as it always is, because I think about the amount of data that we have, which is as much as we're going to have this close to the season. I've seen spring practices, heard about summer workouts, seen fall camp, talked to my people, you've talked to yours, and you look and see what the Vegas win total is for your Golden Gophers, which, do you know what it is as we sit here so close?
No, I don't. So I'll take a stab here. I think it was 5.5 early. I'll go with 6.5.
It is now 6.5.
Okay.
On places like DraftKings and FanDuel. But it is juiced so that you take the, I think it's +130. So like it just snuck over.
Sure.
The 5.5, which it had been sitting for 8 months up until I think the last couple of weeks here. So it is fascinating because, as we both know, this is a Gopher football team that has won 7 or more games, and I believe 4 of the last 5 five of the last six full seasons at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And yet Vegas, for the umpteenth straight season, doesn't believe in that. And they're just going to say that Minnesota is going to regress. But that's where I just think even the fascinating exercise of this is ultimately we will give win totals. But I think the thing I want to stress off the bat is something I've talked about in a few different episodes here this month, which is this team at least has the ingredients to do something special. I mean, there are some years where the ingredients of your roster, whether that's coaches, whether that's players, or whether that's schedule, don't all line up to where you can make a great meal of a season. Well, you've got both coordinators returning for whatever you think of Greg Harbaugh and Danny Collins. You've got both of them returning. You've got your quarterback back. You've got your center back. You've got an NFL tailback in Darius Taylor. You've got two NFL draft picks in the next draft on both sides of your offensive and defensive lines, and Greg Johnson, Anthony Smith. Like, and you missed the top two teams in the conference, in my opinion, which peace and love to Kurt Cignetti and the Indiana Hoosiers, who Minnesota will now play on the road for the third consecutive season, Luke, the reigning national champion, which how blessed and highly favored to be in such a great conference like the Big Ten, am I right?
Yeah, I mean, it's very clear the SEC and the Big Ten have really separated themselves. And I think more importantly, this is probably the best Big Ten that I can think of in the last 5 years.
Yes, I think the difference between, and I've spent a lot of time talking with people about this over the last few months, and I think it's an interesting discussion point, is the difference between, say, the seventh best team in the Big Ten and the 15th best team is really not that much at this point. Mm-hmm. I think that is where the middle to bottom tiers of the Big Ten have elevated themselves so much. Now, whether that's monetary input for somebody like UCLA, who has given Bob Chesney plenty of resources, which I don't know how Martin Jarman and the UCLA athletic department continue to rack up the debt, yet nobody comes to try and collect, Luke, but that's a whole different podcast, like our pre-production meeting. Or if it's like, again, I just think the caliber of team, like, it's not like you're out there watching, I mean, some of these really bad teams from 10 years ago in the Big Ten where they're just getting absolutely mollywopped. So I do think that's where it makes for such an interesting season, because we talk about every year on this one, it seems like coin flip games. And that is where I have, I think, 7 or 8 more coin flip games. And that's where, to kind of lead into this, Minnesota, and I saw this graphic when I was watching Minnesota's training camp schedule episode on BTN.
Mm-hmm.
I believe the Gophers are tied for the second most one possession wins over the last 5 years, which that makes a lot of sense knowing, you know, what we know about this Gopher football team and how Fleck wants to run it, but they're going to have to continue that high success rate in those games if they're going to continue to have the success that they are.
Yeah. You know, games are won on the margins now more than ever. Yeah. And the Gophers, you might look back at a season and you might look at the record and you go, well, 7-5, 8-4. And to your point, you know, maybe five or six of those games were one score games. Mm-hmm. And the days of just having blowout fun games, or blowout, I shouldn't say fun, but like blowout, like relaxing, not stress filled, sure, are probably gone. But man, that's also what makes this really fun too. Like I think it is really fun. I love this iteration of the Big Ten much more than I did before. And yes, it might be hard, but I don't think that 7-5 is the same 7-5 from 2010.
Yeah,
it's not. It's in no way not.
One, it's why you're an elite college football mind. Many of our listeners and viewers say that about you. Is
thank you.
Be 7-5 in 2026 compared to a 7-5 in 2016 is so different with how the Big Ten has elevated themselves, both at the top, the middle, and the bottom, and how it's gone from power four to essentially a power two. But I almost think, too, this is the best part, and I said this at Launchpad Golf for our All Big Ten Honors episode, it's like almost Christmas, where the anticipation of the season, you can feel it, you're excited, everybody's mm-hmm. got optimism, there's not a lot of negativity, and it's mm-hmm. just the best time of the year, because once you start to unwrap your gifts one by one as you go through the season, Some weeks it's going to be great. Some weeks it's going to be truly horrific. But you never know mm-hmm. until you open the gift. But the beautiful part is, Luke, I don't have to now spend as much time talking about state judges, conference expansion, TV revenue, different things of that nature, which caused my phone to blow up a little bit. And then I get to play therapist to some people from time to time. So that is the beautiful part, is we get to actually talk about on-field football and not about the Big Ten passing something that says if you bring back a guy from the NFL, yada, yada, yada. It's a very interesting time, right?
I would just say, Ryan, one of the perks of running a message board is you are part therapist. Have you considered updating your resume to put online therapist as well?
One, you are loved, Luke. I hope that when you woke up today, somebody loved you, and I hope that somebody was you, because that would be very healthy of you. But I mean, there are certainly times. So
I do want to put this disclaimer out there. I'm not trying to disparage therapy as someone who has used therapy, but also someone whose brother-in-law manages a bunch of therapists, and we have numerous therapists that listen to the podcast. Not disparaging that at all. It is very important, and more so find it funny that Ryan has to do it for passionate Gopher fans more than anything.
It is not even just fans. It's people at higher levels too. It's such an interesting job. Now,
yeah,
I suppose we should probably get into it, which means
we got to start
with game one, which is 1 week from tonight. It is going to be September 3rd against the Eastern Illinois Panthers of the Ohio Valley. An FCS team comes to town. Luke, tell me top to bottom everything you know about this Panther team.
Okay. I don't know a ton about them, but I will say this. The FCS level and the Power 2 level have never been more separated, right? Yep. I think that's all I need to know about this game, really. I think Minnesota is going to use this probably as more of not a preseason game, but like a tune-up game in trying to see what they have and where they have it, maybe try some things. Mm-hmm. And the goal of this game is to come out healthy. It always is to come out healthy. One thing I'm going to add this year, Ryan, I did hear from you that we are not going to be using what was the very beloved breakdown from all of the large language models that picked the game last year too. But I would like you to classify each of these games. I really liked how we classified like coin flip games, but let's also use the classification of like heavy favorite, underdog, you know, like heavy underdog as well. So in this game, I look at the Gophers as a heavy favorite. I think that there isn't much question. I think there is a betting line currently. I haven't looked to see what it is. I'm guessing it's in the 40s.
Minnesota minus 41.5.
Okay. Yeah. So I am going to take Minnesota 45-10 in this game. So I guess I'm technically taking an under. I'm taking the under on the point spread there. Yeah. But I really think it's one of the downsides of NIL is that gap becoming so much larger between the FCS and the Power 2. Just stay healthy in this game. That's the most important thing.
And that's where you think about a game last year, like Northwestern State, where the Gophers won a trillion to nothing. And that's where Jalen Logan Redding got cut down on the backside in the second half and wasn't the same player for the rest of the season, which was very unfortunate.
Yes.
When you think about Eastern Illinois, if you're going to go for a little stroll down Narrative Street, Luke.
Oh, I heard this already.
The revenge game for offensive line coach Brian Callahan, who coached here and has heard the chatter all offseason about the Minnesota Moving Company. All right. We will get a lot more long-winded about Eastern Illinois in about 96 hours time when we actually preview this game in much more in-depth fashion. Here's what I'll tell you. They're on a 7-game losing streak in the FCS. They play a game on Thursday. Okay. They play a game. So the Gophers will have game tape of them. But I mean, this is a game where you just get out healthy. You rush for 250 yards. You get some guys some experience. You try to figure out what you got going on at right guard, right tackle, defensive tackle. Yeah. Minnesota wins 45-3. You're 1-0 going into a huge barometer game the next week.
Okay, so we'll talk about that next game. That is going to be on September 12th. That is home against Mississippi State. Out of curiosity, Ryan, how has that merged thread been going between you and the Mississippi State board?
Not great, Bob. Not great. The SEC versus the Big Ten on gophergazette.com, which, wow, what a great natural transition there, Luke, to talk about if you're listening to this right now, I have been putting out my bold predictions. I just put out my quote-unquote guys that I want to be bullish on. Like last year, it was Jalen Smith. I picked four guys, two guys on offense, two guys on defense. We'll have updated projected depth chart. 60% off right now through the opener. We would love for you to come on board. We are one of the top-selling sites here in August. There's a lot of optimism about Gopher football. I get it. But if you want to join something like that where the message board community can be your therapist and you can chirp other Mississippi State fans, you can ask them about different things. Because guess what? We all get to go to Starkville, Mississippi next year, Luke, and listen to the cowbells when Minnesota has to travel down to SEC country. But yeah, there's certainly some consternation between the SEC and the Big Ten. Who knew?
I peaked it a little bit and I was like, I'm going to stay out of there.
Yeah.
It doesn't need me.
That's okay. I tell you, there's a lot of traction on that thread, a lot of thoughts and feelings being exchanged, I'm sure, especially as we get closer to this game, which will be a 2:30 p.m. kickoff on CBS, which it's going to be weird hearing the I'll be at the game, I won't be listening to it, but the bumper music for CBS to count them in for a 2:30 p.m. kickoff between Mississippi State and Minnesota. But welcome to the new era of the TV overlords.
Okay, if we classified the last game as the Gophers as a heavy favorite, how would you classify this game against Mississippi State?
As a coin flip, I would probably guess that Minnesota ends up being a two-point favorite somewhere around there. In these coin flip games, the way I talk about them, I think last year I said somewhere between 40 and 60. I think this year I want to expand those parameters slightly, which Luke is going to come at my head about, to 35 to 65, where you still got a decent chance either way, but it's just so complicated because so many of these teams, as we try to prognosticate here, try and use some Dan Barrero-esque verbiage, is what we don't know. So I do think Minnesota will be a slight favorite, but we'll see what happens when that line comes out.
All right. Yeah. I was waffling between favorite and coin flip. I think I'll settle on coin flip as well. You know, if you look at the history of last year, Mississippi State is a rebuilding SEC roster. Mm-hmm. You know, Minnesota, you would hope that they can use their offensive line and run game to kind of solidify that identity that Coach Harbaugh talked about with Darius Taylor. And hopefully they can control, you know, the game script, and then they can cruise to a victory. I will pick the Gophers to win a close one. I will pick 28-24.
Interesting. So when you think about this game, you have to remember this is the first time since 1959 an SEC team has traveled to the Twin Cities. Mm. And that is when Vanderbilt came up here and Minnesota won 20-6. Which is a very 1959 score. Now, this is an SEC team that doesn't have lofty expectations like Dak Prescott and Dan Mullen are out there and coaching them to a top five team. They have a 4.5 win total. And the thing that I am so incredibly curious about on the Mississippi State side specifically is their offensive and defensive lines, where there has been some turnover even within the last 5 weeks with Mississippi State, where their longtime assistant, David Turner, I believe is his name, who had been an analyst, had been coaching the Mississippi State Bulldog defensive line for something like 20 years. And he decides to walk away right before fall camp. I mean, look, I ain't going to say nothing, but like, I think we all can read some tea leaves here of what that means. And then we're also seeing Mississippi State pick up some more portal guys like Minnesota did with Luke Drzewski, the New Mexico kicker, who, as we sit here in time, is still eligible. Yes. Well, if you're still picking up defensive tackles, What do you think that tells you about how you feel about where things are at on the interior?
Were these guys though players for them on roster last year?
No.
Okay. So, geez.
So they literally I thought for some reason they were West Virginia here within the last 72 hours. So that is the thing I want to see is what are they like up front? Because I think Minnesota has a chance to be pretty good up front, but this is a huge barometer game, which leads me back to the Minnesota side where it's not even necessarily about Mississippi State to me, because even going back to 2019, what do we remember about September?
Oh man, it was like close game, skinnier teeth, but found a way.
It was South Dakota State, an absolute meat grinder. It was third and 30 against Georgia Southern to Demetrius Douglas to have a hope chip cheering a chance. And then it was Fresno State to just skirt by. And that team ended up winning 11 games.
Yeah. But
that's where in recent seasons, these September games, I think about North Carolina twice, where Drake May went nuclear on you in North Carolina. Ethan didn't look good, was just missing guys all over the field. You have North Carolina at home where Brad Johnson's kid gets hurt, and then the offense doesn't do well. It's Brosmer's first game. Dragon Kesich misses multiple kicks. You've got Cal last year. I think even 2-3 years back, you had Iowa at home, and you're up at halftime, and then you completely lay an egg in the second half. We have seen throughout the Fleck tenure that September is not always crisp and clean, and as Fleck says at practice every time I'm there, start fast, accelerate in the middle, and finish strong. They have not done that.
No.
So I am very curious to see, against a 4.5 win SEC team projected, like, can you come out fast? Now, the other part of this that leads me into is this also starts the, I hope Danny Collins, Minnesota's defensive coordinator, is ready for mobile quarterbacks this year.
Yeah.
Because they get one of the best high-end athletes that they will face with the ball in his hands all season in Kamario Taylor. Now, Kamario Taylor is the signal caller for Mississippi State. He has two career starts. Both of them came in the final two games of the year against Ole Miss in the Egg Bowl. And then I think they played Wake Forest in the bowl game. In those two starts, he completed 52% of his throws, had two fumbles, one touchdown, one interception. Not exactly great through the air last year in those opportunities, but he did run for 264 yards, force 18 missed tackles as a runner in those two starts, and run for three touchdowns and over 8 yards per carry. That scares me because it's not the first play where if you can keep him contained in the pocket, great. But if he breaks contain, he is a liability to house it. So that is going to be one of the big things of the season because Minnesota plays as many mobile quarterbacks as I can remember as we continue to get into the schedule, but you have to contain Kamario Taylor. So ultimately I have to pick. And this is one of my coin flip ones where because this game's at home, because I have slightly more faith in Minnesota in the trenches, I'm going to say a late field goal from the hashtag Daniel DePrato Magic School puts the Gophers in the win column, 27-24, and the Gophers are 2-0 going into who wants to be the offensive coordinator school because you can win the opening drive.
I was going to say, great minds think for themselves.
Yeah.
All right. So the next game will be week 3. This will be Saturday, September 19th, home against the Zips of Akron.
And what time is that game, Luke?
I didn't have that pulled up. I should.
It is an 11 a.m., which is just as the Lord intended.
Yeah, I know you love those. Mm-hmm. This is another one that I would probably classify as the Gophers is a heavy favorite. This is a MAC team.
You'll be a 20-plus point favorite in this game. Yeah. Regardless of the Mississippi State outcome, you'll be a 20-plus point favorite.
Yeah. I think this is going to be a theme you're going to see with, you know, MAC teams, FCS teams playing Power 2 teams consistently across the board this season. Yeah, so I would expect a heavy dose of running the ball if we know PJ Fleck like we think we do in this game. And I frankly don't know a lot. I haven't done a deep dive on the Zips of Akron so far this year, Ryan. You can fill me in, but I'm not going to waver. I'm going to take, this is going to be the second 40-point game of the season so far. 42-13 for your Gophers.
What are you, Greg Harbaugh's father, predicting all these 40?
You've said this could be the second best offense. So I'm going to take it.
So here's what I'll tell you about Akron. If we're looking for the narrative street angle, we already didn't talk about how both Wally brothers played. One played for Minnesota, one played for Mississippi State, and now the younger one is committed to Minnesota. Now, for the Akron Zips, this is the Marquise Williams revenge game. If you've never heard of that name in your life, don't blame you. If you're a hardcore Rube, like the lovely and handsome people of Gopher Gazette, he was the other running back who came in with Darius Taylor out of the high school ranks. And life has not been as kind to him. Now he's on the Akron Zips. We'll see if he gets carries. But this is a MAC school that is projected to be the 10th best out of 13 teams. So Joe Moorhead is the head coach. They're not predicted to be a good MAC team. They've got Wake Forest and Robert Morris before this game. The portal was not kind to them, especially on the offensive line, as they lost players to Auburn, Pitt, and Kansas State. Their top receiver from last year is at Oklahoma State. Their best defensive tackle is now taking the oil money to go to Texas Tech. I just don't see a Bowling Green type of situation here because the rosters are just so different because of how the MAC and all these other different group of fives just get pillaged now in the transfer portal era. So I'm going to say Minnesota wins 34-13, 3-0 going into sailgating season.
Sailgating season in Seattle on the 26th of September. Do you still think there's a chance this could get flexed?
So that is the number one question I continue to get. I was at practice, that final open practice, and I was talking with a couple of high-level people there on the sidelines. This game is going to be on Saturday. I don't know what time. I'm going to guess it's going to be a night game for those of you who haven't booked travel yet. But for those of you who are holding out hope it would be a Friday game, this game will be played on Saturday.
Okay.
Did you make your sailgating reservations yet because you are the resident Huskies Rube?
No, I haven't. The plan is still to try and make it out there. Life's a little crazy. I don't have anything booked yet. I still can make that happen. I have a couple of places I can stay. I will be able to get tickets, but I haven't done it yet. It might not happen just because of life circumstances. That's fine. I will be disappointed, but man, it's a place I love. You know that well. It's a stadium that I love. It's an area that I love. I should give some recommendations on, you know, restaurants and things to do for those that, that might be interested at some point. I'll give you some of my favorites. Then when we break down that game, I'll be very active in that, on that preview for that game. Washington though, this is the Big Ten road opener. Washington's been awesome at home in recent years. They're going to be a pretty explosive team. I will say this, Husky Stadium is a great experience and it is a loud stadium. They have a home field advantage for a reason. Really good, passionate fan base. Very interested to see where they are with the current quarterback situation and how that's all going to play out. And I'm still a skeptical Jed Fish guy. Maybe I shouldn't be, but I sit here and I am. I have firsthand experience with him.
First of all, I have to correct you. That is former Gopher football 2009 offensive coordinator Jed Fish.
I know.
Who has now ascended to take over in now his third year as the Washington Huskies.
What was your favorite Jed Fish moment as the offensive coordinator for the Gophers? Because I have a very distinct memory of one.
I feel like I should ask Adam Weber, but I'll go on. I'll ask you.
I forget the tight end's name, but they ran a tight end reverse in one of those games.
Was it like Tau Arnett?
No. It wasn't him. It was one of the Brewster recruits.
The best part is someone is screaming at us at their TV or in their car right now. Which
I'll try and look it up here. But it was at home. They tried to run a tight end reverse, got basically blown up. And I was like, this is just too cute. We're trying to be too cute.
Oh, Jed Fish. Well, here's what I'll tell you. Do you know when the last time was Minnesota and Washington played each other?
No, I don't.
You weren't alive. Neither was I.
Okay.
The year was 1977, and peace and love were flowing throughout this wonderful country of ours. The Gophers won 19-17 in 1977, but it has almost been 50 years since these two teams have squared off. Now, you've taken some of my thunder with Washington, But if we've learned anything about Washington with Jed Fish, they are a completely different team at home than they are away from Husky Stadium. In the 2 years Jed Fish has been head coach, now I think Damon Williams has been his quarterback, and we'll get into everybody's favorite former almost LSU Tiger quarterback and that whole saga. But they are 7-2 at home with some pretty dang good wins and some pretty dang good losses, by the way, of who they lost to. But away from Husky Stadium, they are 2-7 with some true what in the world are you doing losing to that team moments. So unfortunately for Minnesota, this game is played at Husky Stadium. Now, I might add the recency bias aspect of Minnesota was horrific away from Huntington Bank Stadium last year, and now this is the first road game, and oh, by the way, it's two time zones away. So you can see the angst of Washington plays great in Seattle. The Gophers refused to travel at any point outside of their bowl game last year. And now they get another hyper-mobile signal caller in Damon Williams, who you alluded to, has had quite the offseason, where back in January, he attempted to get out of his million-dollar-something contract with Washington to go to LSU. And the Big Ten ultimately said, screw you. You can't do that. So he stays, and he's going to be the Washington signal caller again. His passing numbers show a guy last year completed over 69% of his throws, 3-1 touchdown to interception ratio. And oh, by the way, as Luke's got the Damon Williams Jr. jersey now hanging in the background, 775 rushing yards with 6 rushing touchdowns. It is not about the first play with Damon Williams. It can be, and he's an accurate passer who can kill you with his arm, but it is the second play with his legs that scares me. So until I see Minnesota actually travel well, and it pains me to say this because I talked with so many fine folks at Launchpad Golf about this game, they're going to be going out. I'll be out there. You'll be out there. Until I can see Minnesota travel well, I'm going to predict Washington, the number 17 team in the country in the preseason AP top 25, wins this game 31-23. I do think the chess match between Danny Collins versus Damon Williams and then Greg Harbaugh versus Ryan Walters, who is the defensive coordinator. Now, those two have gone head-to-head, and we'll get into that when we preview that in a more extensive fashion in September. I think so much of this comes down to Minnesota can keep up with Washington. Like, this is a game that, as I wrote about this for Gopher Gazette, which people should go read, I classify as a coin flip game, Luke. Now, I don't know that the Vegas spread is going to indicate that. My guess is that Minnesota is somewhere between a 7-9 point underdog, but it doesn't take a ton to think, like, if they just travel well, that you can keep up with Washington. Like, Washington is not a team like Ohio State or Oregon this year where it's like unbeatable, but they are certainly very good at home, which I think ultimately gives them the edge.
Yeah, your margin for error in Seattle is going to be much more narrow, right? Correct. That I'm glad you highlighted, and I try to touch on that as well. I do want to close the loop. It was Eric Lair on the tight end reverse for Jed Fish against Wisconsin in 2009. It was an 8-yard game.
Eric, you know, I'm going to be honest with you, Luke. I haven't thought about Eric Lair since probably Eric Lair graduated, which peace and love to him and his family. But what a recall by you. The elite Gopher football mind that many people are listening to right now.
Shout out to Gopher Sports and just a quick tight end reverse Minnesota. And the name I was going for was Eric and nailed it. Okay. I will also pick Washington to win. I'm going to pick them 27-20. I just think that the Husky Stadium is going to tilt this in favor of the home team. I don't love the mobility of the quarterback, and the Husky defense is just always better at home. So I will give this, I'll give the tilt there to the Huskies. So we move to October 3rd. This is home against a new Michigan team, Ryan, a Kyle Whittingham Michigan team. And frankly speaking, I would expect Minnesota to be an underdog in this game, but I think it'll be closer than we would have thought the last time that Michigan visited Huntington Bank Stadium.
This is another one of these games where it's such an interesting barometer game for what this Minnesota team can be, because you look at the number 16 team in the country, the Michigan Wolverines. This will be their first game away from Michigan throughout, because their first four games are all at home, which, oh, by the way, you're going to have some pretty good game tape on them, because number 10, Oklahoma, comes to town. And then the week prior to when Minnesota plays them, number 22, Iowa, travels. So it'll be fascinating to see what Michigan travels like. Now, I would also tell you that I think so much of this too, and I was talking with some listeners about it at the live event, is, do you know when the last time was Minnesota beat Michigan in Minneapolis?
I did hear this was I think it was something in like the 70s, maybe.
That same year that the Gophers played Washington, they played Michigan. And they also beat them. So 1977, quite the year. It has been since 1977. The last time was that the little brown jug was paraded around for Minnesota fans after the game. Now, the big disclaimer with this game is Minnesota, for whatever reason, under PJ Fleck, just plays ranked teams a lot better at home. Like, I think about the way that they beat Penn State in 19. They beat USC when they were ranked coming to town. They went toe-to-toe with that Penn State team back in 2024 all the way down to the final whistle. They play quality teams at home much better. Now, I'm sure that's true for many different college football teams. But the fact that this game is at home puts it into the territory of coin flip game number three for me. But also, Luke, may I interest you in yet another mobile quarterback by the name of Brett Underwood?
Yeah.
That is now three really good, dang good athletes in the first five games for this Gopher defense. So Bryce Underwood is a cat who I think is better with his legs than he is with his arm. I'm not a big Bryce Underwood guy. Maybe that appears to be foolish as he continues to gain experience, but I know he's got the prospect pedigree, the five-star nature. He just put way too many balls in harm's way with his arm last year. That I think that's got to be the MO, is if you can just make Bryce Underwood beat you with his arm, you've got a much better shot. But that's where this thing comes down to, is what do we know about Kyle Whittingham teams from going back to his Utah days? What is the nature of their personality?
Tough and good defense.
Tough, physical, good up front. Mm-hmm. And that is where I'm worried that even for what I perceive to be a strength for Minnesota, which could be their lines, I'm worried that 60 minutes of Michigan football is one that ultimately they can just run the rock for over 200 yards. And if that's the case, or if Drake Lindsey's constantly under duress, that is where it gets a little bit more dicey. Now, I could see this being a game that, you know, Minnesota walks away with. I'm not going to pick that here today. I'm going to say it's 24-20. The number 16 team in the country, Michigan, comes away. Minnesota drops to 3-2. But it's one of those games to which, as I said, the same thing with Washington, who is ranked one spot behind them. This is not like a David versus Goliath situation, like the Gophers traveling to Oregon and Ohio State for night games last year. This is, they come to your place. It's their first road game. You've been much better at home. Like, they are a good team, but so are you. And I feel like we also don't know a ton about what Kyle Whittingham's roster looks like. And if Bryce Underwood can take the next step, it is certainly going to be Drake Lindsey versus Bryce Underwood is the storyline. Both third year, sophomore quarterbacks, I should say. But it comes down to which team wins up front, usually walks away with a little brown jug.
Yeah, I really think that Michigan probably is going to have a slight advantage in terms of roster talent, but I don't think that they're a significant tier above, for example. And obviously, Minnesota being at home should help them keep it competitive. But like you, I'm going to pick Michigan, but I'm going to pick them 27-23. In the end, I'm a little concerned about mobile quarterbacks like we were last year. Until I see that improve, I'm going to stick with that narrative as well. So let's jump to October 10th. This is an away game at Purdue in West Lafayette. Ryan, this is a game that I would sort of expect the Gophers to be teetering on a favorite. It could be a coin flip game, but I definitely think they could be a favorite in this one. But I think what we learned in the first five games is really going to help kind of solidify that classification.
I need you to further clarify that. Do you think Purdue is going to be favored at home?
No, I think Minnesota is going to be a favorite. Could be a favorite. I could see it being a coin flip, but I think that it probably leans a little bit more to Minnesota being a favorite, even though Purdue is at home.
I mean, Minnesota is going to be a favorite. And the thing with this game is a couple different things. One, let's look at, we're now at the point of the schedule where I would tell you it matters so much more when doing exercises like this to look at right before you play this team, who did they play? Because when you're dealing with 18 to 23 year olds, couple of tough games, that's going to take its toll. And that's where Minnesota's got two ranked teams before this. Who does Purdue have? They have Notre Dame at home, which I think they're a college football playoff team. And then you're on the road against Brett Bielema's Illinois Fighting Illini, who is obviously a very tough, physical, hard-nosed team too. So I would tell you right now, this game has all the hallmarks of the classic PJ Fleck letdown spot game.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, you got two ranked opponents in the two previous weeks. You got a bye week right after this. It's probably going to be a sleepy 11 a.m. kickoff in West Lafayette against a team that hasn't won a conference game in, I think, 2 years. This can't be that spot to me, because I go back to 2023. You blow a 3-score fourth quarter lead to Northwestern, and then you also have the infamous Illinois' backup quarterback comes in on fourth down deep in their own end zone at Huntington Bank Stadium, and three plays later, they take the lead. You go back to 24. The North Carolina debacle at home with missed kicks and missed opportunities. And then you have your offensive line imploding in a spectacular fashion in Piscataway, New Jersey. And then last year, there was the Wrigley Field debacle where you made the Northwestern Wildcats offense look like Pete Crow Armstrong, Mark Grace, Chris Bryant. Can I keep going down the list of your favorite Cubs of yesteryear?
Please don't.
But, I mean, that's ultimately why I have this. Yeah, as a coin flip game in my mind, it should not be to me, because this is a team that you should take care of, but it's your sixth game in a row. Same thing with Purdue. They'll be coming off some tough games. So are you, but you're on the road where it's just tougher to win nowadays. It's also, Luke, the Femme Ijaboy revenge game, even though I will clarify right now, there is no bad blood between the two sides. But that is your narrative, is Femme Ijaboy versus Danny Collins, ladies and gentlemen.
I did have this in my notes, that this was probably going to be... I have put a column into my notes, Ryan, the narrative streak column, and I did have the Femme revenge game.
So I just want to have that out there of this has letdown spot potential. I don't believe it's going to be that way. I think Minnesota finds a way to win, but you just cannot overlook any Big Ten opponent, as we talked about, because everybody is that much more talented than they were 10 years ago. So I have Minnesota winning this game going into their bye week 31-20. That would mean, in my mind, they are 4-2 going into the bye.
Yeah. I imagine that this is probably a multi-year rebuild for Purdue. I think that's a fair assessment of them. Yeah. I think that Minnesota, it was a close game last year. I think Minnesota is an improved roster. And I don't know, maybe I'm just drinking the Kool-Aid, but I do think that Minnesota should be a favorite in this game. I'll pick them 30-17. So, as you said, this is going to take them into the bye week.
What are your bye week plans, Mr. Buer?
Good question. My bye week plans. I don't know. I haven't gotten that far into my planning. Mm-hmm. What yours have to be hunting related, right?
I wish, but then I was told that I have to go to Truckee, California, to go to a wedding. So I will be out at a wedding. So hopefully I'll get into some hunting. Hopefully I can get this 155-inch 10-pointer that's on my trail cameras that we're hoping sticks around after he sheds his velvet. But we will be heading out to one of your favorite places, because you're a big skier. I know that you are. Have you ever skied in your life?
Yeah, I actually grew up skiing.
I have skied once in my life. I've never been into the powder. But Truckee, California, and then we get to come back. And welcome to Floyd of Rosedale Week, Mr. Buer.
All right. Well, as you know, Ryan, because I'm a Gopher Illustrated member.
What is that website again?
Gosh, Gopher Gazette. It's going to take, it's kind of like when churches rebrand their names and you're like an entire generation is going to have to die before that church actually becomes that name. So I'll get there eventually. Give me a break. Okay. I'm trying. As a Gopher Gazette subscriber, probably what bye week is going to be is getting up on a Saturday, turning on that complimentary Paramount Plus for my kids, watching, I don't know, probably like Blazing the Monster Machines in Spanish. and then watching some college football. I hope the slate's good that weekend. I don't actually know. For all I know, that's MEA. Maybe getting out. Maybe they're picking corn by then. Probably not, but maybe definitely in the beans. So we'll see.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I always on television watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton.
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
So with this Iowa team, I talked about it because I want people to subscribe again, 60% off gophergazette.com, and you instantaneously smell better, I'm told, become smarter, much more handsome and or beautiful. And you get to connect with a very, very passionate Gopher fan base, which seemingly every week, there are incredible discounts on Gopher tickets or sometimes even free. But in my 5 bold predictions piece, and I'm going to stick to it in this episode, is I think this is the year they get over the hump at home against Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
Because the reality of the situation is Kirk Ferentz, and let me be explicitly clear before this gets clipped by some Iowa podcasts, I am well aware that Kirk Ferentz owns PJ Fleck. He is 8-1 against the Golden Gophers, including 4-0 in Minneapolis, where he has an average margin of victory of what, Luke?
Oh, it's got to be like 18 or 20 points.
16, just over okay. 16 points.
And I will say, like, it's either a blowout or alternatively, it's like they ripped your heart out because it was a game you played really close and you had the one crucial mistake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like a slot. It's just, it hasn't been great here in Minneapolis. Now, why I say what I do and have to stand behind it, and what's the why and the how of how we predict this outcome, I think is more important than the actual outcome. Just to have you think about it, you, the listener, the viewer, is I don't see a very large talent discrepancy between these two teams this year. Like, I think about how Iowa had 7 NFL draft selections.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the most in my lifetime for the Hawkeyes. And replacing that kind of talent for a team that has a payroll similar to Minnesota is difficult, man. I mean, you're just going to take your lumps, and you add in the questions at quarterback as well, where I know at the open practice that Iowa had, the Wake Forest transfer looked like, I mean, he looked incredible. And then when BTN was there here in the last 10 days, you had to have like the BTN guys come out with like the disclaimer of, so Hilinski was horrific, but he hasn't been that way throughout fall camp.
So hold on, back up. In the open practice, he was actually really good.
He had like, he completed like the Wake Forest transfer. Completed something like 80% of his passes for five touchdowns, no interceptions, just torched Phil Parker's defense. And then when BTN was there, probably the next week, I think he had something like four or five turnovers, which, welcome to Phil Parker.
Yeah.
But I think there's a realistic chance Iowa goes into the season rotating quarterbacks. And that's where, if Dan Owen has taught us anything, is if you have two quarterbacks, you have how many quarterbacks?
You have no quarterbacks.
So
I have a question, though. Can they get the quarterback back from the wind Dragan Kesich game?
No. The Dragan Kesich. Who? Oh, it was the big, he was the big lad. I like to call him a high calorie connoisseur. I don't remember.
The thing that is lost in that game was they had the ball and then he threw a horrific interception after, the invalid signal. So it wasn't like there wasn't a chance, but
and
I'm not trying to brag about that. He just wasn't very good that day. And he maybe was good all the other games. I don't remember.
So you have Iowa replacing seven NFL draft selections, plus some like quality UDFAs like Mark Gronowski, Aaron Graves. Yeah. You've got questions at quarterback, which that scares me a little bit if I'm a Hawkeye fan. And then you add in, what does Iowa's schedule look like before Minnesota? Now, they also have a bye week to prepare for this game, which I think is actually a pretty cool aspect of it. But the three-game stretch for Iowa is like, I would argue it's almost more difficult than what Minnesota has. Minnesota has two ranked teams too, but that includes a road game against Michigan. You have to then host the number one team in the country, the Ohio State Buckeyes. And then the week before their bye, same week as Minnesota's, they have to travel out to Washington to play the Huskies. So I don't know where I was going to be at. Now, for a game like this, you throw out the records anyway. Both teams will have to, again, prepare for the Floyd of Rosedale. You get an extra bye week. Minnesota's played historically better at home. But do you see why I'm a little bit more skeptical this year on Iowa, especially with this game for Minnesota at home, than I would be in other years?
Yeah, definitely. And, to your point earlier, Floyd of Rosedale rivalry games have been historically low scoring or a blowout, right? And I would hope that this one isn't a blowout. They're usually decided by, special teams or turnover margins. I would hope that with Daniel DiPrato, you have some improved special teams.
Well, that's interesting part about this is Iowa's longtime special teams coordinator, LeVar Woods,
left
Michigan State.
Yeah.
And there's been a tremendous amount of turnover in the specialist room, which you can't have discussion about Iowa without talking about their specialists. So good on you for making sure that we do that. It's just, there's so much turnover for Iowa, and I still think they have quality talent, especially on their offensive line. It's just, can Minnesota avoid the catastrophic mistake, and does one of these Iowa quarterbacks ultimately make the mistake that we've seen so many Gopher quarterbacks, or can Minnesota have the special teams break that Iowa seemingly gets every season? I mean, that's the thing
break.
I want to see.
Yeah.
So why are you picking it?
I'll take Minnesota 20-17. This is very much a coin flip game for me.
Yep.
Without question. And I'll take Minnesota 20-17.
Yeah, this is coin flip game number five for me. And like I said, I think this is the year where they find a way to do it. And if Minnesota finds a way to do it, I will be very, very clear when I say this next statement. If Minnesota gets the ball back to kneel it out, Philip John Fleck should absolutely take every timeout that he has left because that is the beauty of rivalries, is pettiness and receipts. And Ferentz can say, yeah, well, I'm 8-2, but Minnesota can say, well, what about this pig on our shoulder? So I'm going to say Minnesota wins 17-16 in a very Big Ten West themed back and forth type of contest, and 5-2 going into the reigning national champs.
We are exactly the same so far.
I hate being in lockstep with you, Luke.
Yeah, well, because I'm not a professional. I was surprised. You said you have 5 coin flip games. I have 2 coin flip games. 1 the Gophers are a favorite in, and 2 they're an underdog in. You must have the favorite and underdog in coin flip games, Washington,
Michigan. We have a different definition, I think. I think anything plus or minus a touchdown doesn't really, again, anywhere between 35 and 65% win probability in my own mind with my own algorithm in my own head is kind of what I dictate as a coin flip game. That's where I've already got 5 in the first 7, largely. Yeah. And I will tell you right now, the Indiana game, not one that I have as a coin flip game.
I have Minnesota as a heavy underdog in this game.
Yep.
This will be a Halloween game. Now, I have some great memories of Halloween games as a student, particularly that Michigan State game. I don't know if you remember that when Kirk Cousins came to town and the Gophers found a way.
Back and forth.
Man, Duon Bennett had a great game that game as well. Yep. That was very fun. But no, this Halloween game will be away in Bloomington, Indiana. I mean, Indiana's defending national champions. Man, Kirk Cignetti has been awesome. Yeah.
Third consecutive year that the Gophers have to travel to play at the reigning national champs place, which,
oh, that's a good call out there. Mm-hmm. Memorial Stadium has been really tough of late. Kirk Cignetti has been really tough. One thing I'm really curious about with Indiana, you know, he took in these first 2 years he's been in Indiana, he had a lot of George Mason. I'm forgetting where he was before.
I'm going to let you figure this one out on your own. You invented, first of all, you said Jordan Mason, who I'm pretty sure is a Vikings running back.
Okay. Well, he is. Yeah.
I'm going to let you get there, but continue.
Yeah. I'm very curious to see where this roster is at now, 2 years removed and into this. They've invested obviously a fair amount into the roster. They've invested a lot into their quarterback, and is that going to hit? Very curious. I don't know where they'll be. I do think that they are, from a talent perspective, probably a tier above the Gophers.
I mean, this will be another one like Michigan, where the team on the field is 8 figures. This has an 8-figure difference between the two teams because Mark Cuban James money, Madison. Indiana money, like it is what it is. James but that's Madison. Where. For this game, it's funny to say, like, okay, in this hypothetical scenario that Luke and I are laying out, Minnesota's got a 5-2 record. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling you, they're going to be 2 touchdown underdogs easily. Now, here's what I'll tell you about this game and why I think there is a little angle of this for Halloween, where this will be Indiana's 9th consecutive game.
They don't
get a bye week till after this game. So they are going to be beat up a little bit coming into this, especially because, do you know the 2 teams that they have prior to Minnesota coming to town?
Let's go with Ohio State and Oregon. I don't have a clue.
2 weeks before, it's this little upstart team out of Columbus, Ohio, has to come into Bloomington when Ohio State takes on Indiana. And then the week before, they travel to this place, I think it's called Ann Arbor, Michigan, to take on the Wolverines. So you get Ohio State and Michigan for your 7th and 8th games, and then Minnesota. Like, all the things I said about, like, the Purdue contest, where you got the bye week right there, and you've played 8 games already, including the last 2 have been incredibly physical. Like, the thing we won't know until the week of Halloween is where is Indiana at health-wise? Now, the beauty of having a $35, $40 million roster isn't necessarily just top-end talent, Luke. It's that you can go buy depth, which is something that I'm going to assume Indiana's done a really good job of talent evaluation, development, and retaining from whatever they did in the portal and their own internal guys. So I just want to plant that seed of there is a chance here that Indiana's real banged up, or that Minnesota just elects to, after coming off the, you know, Iowa win, they're feeling their oats a little bit, and they come out and they start playing hot. But ultimately, I do think Indiana, who I'm going to have as a college football playoff team, wins 34-20, and the Gophers drop to 5-3.
Yeah, I have this one as a 38-14. I was teetering on, you know, does Indiana get into the 40s and Minnesota only gets maybe 10 points, because that feels like that's how Indiana rolls in a lot of their games, quite a large margin. But I'll go with 38-14. I do think that the Gophers are going to be a heavy underdog. I'm hopeful, though, that maybe we catch them at the right time, as you alluded to, Ryan. So
that's the thing, and I think that's why I have the game almost like 14 points closer, is I think like that's the thing where I don't think Indiana necessarily will have the gas in the tank to potentially really stretch the lead. Now, betting against Kurt Cignetti is a horrific bet, if life in the last 24, 36 months have told us anything. Mm-hmm. But I think that is the thing to me, where if you can just stay off the mat against Cignetti, who is fantastic at putting you down there, that's where it gets interesting.
So you had that 30-17. Is that what you had?
I had it 34-20.
34-20. Okay. I didn't get it written down correctly, because we're going to go back to these again. Okay. The Gophers next will face the UCLA Bruins, the much beloved UCLA Bruins, according to Daniel House. He sees them as the upstart team in the Big Ten, one to look out for. You know, I would imagine, you know, they've spent a fair amount of money, as you alluded to, in the first season of their new head coach, whose name is currently escaping me. Can you help me out?
Bob Chesney. Another James Madison legend to you.
Yeah, another James Madison legend. I would hope that Minnesota has the advantage from a roster perspective, as UCLA was not particularly good last year. I would sort of expect, given this is a home game for the Gophers as well on November 7th, that Minnesota will have a slight edge there and therefore would probably be a slight favorite, but this is probably going to fall into your coin flip game.
Number 6 on the schedule already. This will be the 6th one in 9 games. Here's the thing that you have to know about UCLA this year. One, you got a brand new head coach in Bob Chesney. And one of the things that Chesney did was adopt the Kurt Cignetti approach of taking as many experienced guys as he possibly could, to the point where UCLA leads the Big Ten going into this fall with more than 41,000 collegiate snaps played on their roster. Now, not every snap is created equal, because context is the very important thing in life. A lot of those snaps were at lower levels, and then they're trying to now translate up to the Big Ten. But they are a very experienced team for Bob Chesney this fall. Now, UCLA, and part of why I know House is high on them is same reason I am, where you look at the schedule, that thing is pretty dang easy coming into this game. Where I believe, when looking at it, UCLA has to travel off the West Coast once before this game to the Midwest. They have a game out at Maryland, and then everything else is played in California outside of a trip to Eugene. So they get to essentially stay in the same time zone for the entirely most of the year. Their one time they got to go to the East Coast, it's to play Maryland in September. So this will be the coldest game that they have played all season. And this is where you tell me, well, James Madison guys, of which Chesney brought quite a few with him, are used to playing in the cold. And I would tell you, well, we're going to find out. Because I'm also at the point of the schedule now where, too, you're going to find out what you have in terms of depth pieces, because by this point in November in the Big Ten, everybody's banged up. Everybody's got bumps and bruises, and everybody's trying to figure out a way to get to the end of the season with the best results possible. So I am fascinated to see the depth between UCLA and Minnesota. Now, I think Minnesota against a West Coast team in November on deer opening weekend here, we'll see what the weather is, but it's probably going to be an advantage for Minnesota. It's also yet another athletic quarterback, and I'm not going to try and enunciate the last name here. It is Nico, who was at Tennessee in 2024, led Tennessee to the college football playoff, transferred to UCLA, and is now playing for his third different head coach. But he's a guy that can beat you with his arms and his legs. So this is one where I'm like, I know that there's probably a lot of Gopher fans who are thinking, Ryan, this is like a 70-75% win probability. I don't know about that, man. Like, I think Minnesota coming into this game, because UCLA is going to have a better record than you think. Like, the 2 weeks before, UCLA is playing Michigan State at home, and then they play the Nevada Wolfpack at home. So any bruises or bumps, you can rest those guys against a Mountain West team. I'm going to have Minnesota winning here. But I think my level of confidence with this game is about as low. It's like in the same tier with like me predicting Minnesota beats Iowa, because I just think there's a lot of experience on that UCLA team.
Mm-hmm.
I think Nico, in his now third year as the starter, is going to present problems. But so much of this comes down to who's healthy, who's not. Minnesota wins 28-24, and they get bowl eligible as hopefully everybody fills their freezers with some venison.
Maybe I am too optimistic and I don't know enough, and I should listen to you and more specifically Daniel House on this. I feel like Minnesota is probably falls more into that favorite category.
Like, I think the line for this game is probably like Minnesota. Oh boy. Like, ends up being like -5, -6, maybe not even that much, because the Gophers will be coming off a loss to Indiana more than likely, while UCLA will have made their hay. Because, like I said, I mean, I think that Wisconsin has to go out to Pasadena to play them. Like, you get Michigan State, Maryland, Nevada on the schedule. There are some easy wins, or some wins that UCLA needs to have in year one of Chesney. Now, if they don't, then yeah, maybe this line in UCLA is not as good as I think they would be, because I think they're within like one win on Vegas odds of what the Gophers are. And that's where them having to travel from Pasadena all the way to Minneapolis in November, I think, is a bigger thing than what we're talking about, because that's the reality of 18 to 23 year olds, especially if Minnesota hits them in the mouth in cold weather. We've seen it before and we'll see it again. So I'm going to have, like I said, 28-24 Minnesota wins. But I think this is a sneaky one.
Yeah, I'll take Minnesota 31-20. That's a little bit more confident. But you're right. Like, they could be a lot better. This strategy has worked coming into the Big Ten before. Yep. They've maybe built up their roster more. But let's hope for a little cold there on November 7th. We'll give them a little chill.
Let's do it.
All right. Week 11. Saturday, November 14th, sends the Gophers to Happy Valley to take on Penn State. I think very clearly Minnesota will be an underdog in this game in Matt Campbell's first year. Yep. I believe the Gophers haven't won since 2003, Ryan.
That would be correct. They have played four times since then. The average margin of loss for your Golden Gophers is
30.
20, just over 20 points per game. And in that was everyone's famous Kunle Allende versus Saquon Barkley in space. Also, who could forget Jalen Waters fighting the Penn State kicker who used to run down and try to de-cleat people, to which Jalen Waters said, nah, you're not going to get me. And then when the kicker figured out that Jalen Waters doesn't want any of the smoke, or excuse me, Waters did want the smoke, and then played victim, which I thought was hilarious.
That was hilarious. I do remember that.
But Happy Valley has not been kind. And that's where, luckily for Minnesota, this is not the whiteout game, where for those of you who remember traveling to Happy Valley a couple years ago, the Gophers were the unfortunate victim of a whiteout where Ethan Kaliak-Manis, now Washington Commanders quarterback, made his first career start in a whiteout. And it went
not a good game.
Yeah, just about as you expected. So I'd also tell you, for everybody who has been wishing they could see Matt Campbell against PJ Fleck, you finally get your wish, because no longer is it James Franklin. It is Matt Campbell with more resources than he knows what to do with out at Penn State. So, yeah, this is one where I would imagine the Gophers are probably going to be, I don't know. What do you think? If I had to put a line on this game right now, like minus 14 and, or plus 14 and a half, somewhere around there.
Oh, man, I was going to say like 10 and a half, but.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think, and I'll be the first to tell you again, I don't think Penn State is unbeatable or anything. Like, I don't think they are what Ohio State, Oregon, or Indiana are, because I'm a little bit more skeptical that the Iowa State transfers he's brought in are going to mesh. Now, they still do have plenty of quality players at Penn State. Don't let anybody tell you otherwise.
Yeah.
And that's where, like, one of the underrated parts of Rocco Becht, who is the quarterback that he brought with, is he's got a very Mitch Leidner-esque sense for the goal line, where he doesn't rush for a lot of yards, but he's got 16 rushing touchdowns over the last two seasons. So I just, I mean, Happy Valley is just a place that has been so unkind to Minnesota for so long. Mm-hmm. Like, and I know it's only been four meetings over the last 15, 20 years or whatever it is. I think Penn State wins 31-21. Where it's close-ish, but it's not one of those like last season where it's a laugher.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the fact that you know, this isn't the whiteout game, which has a new meaning if you've paid attention to the news in Happy Valley these days. And frankly speaking, the Gophers are going to be an underdog. I would expect Minnesota to lose this game something like 28-17. I just think that Penn State's talent, factoring in, you know, the good crowd they have and the Gophers' inability to really show up in a real meaningful way on the road. Hopefully we're proved wrong. Mm-hmm. But I would give the hat tip here to Penn State. So
that gets us into Senior Day.
Senior Day, Northwestern, the 21st of November.
Will the Edmund I just want to see the Gopher blowing in your house that week?
What'd you say?
Are you going to be playing the Edmund Fitzgerald song in your house if Northwestern comes to town with a nor'easter blowing down the lake there, me boy?
I was going to say Northwestern last year in Wrigley Field, offensive, just absolute output, defensive, just like ole. Let's see if Minnesota can turn this around. I would imagine, I know how much you love some Aiden Chiles. I know you love his ADOT.
And I love Chip Kelly with him, baby. New Northwestern offensive coordinator, Chip Kelly to me.
I still think the Gophers probably, you're probably going to say this is a coin flip game.
It is.
I'm going to say it's probably closer to Minnesota being the favorite. I would just hope that Minnesota has a little bit of a roster gap on Northwestern and can actually show it this time, rather than having, what was it, the backup quarterback light you up for an incredible number of yards in a baseball stadium.
Oh, so here's what I'll tell you off the rip here. This should not be a coin flip game to me. I think Minnesota should be a pretty good favorite. But if you didn't have the context of the recent Minnesota Northwestern games that have just spiraled into chaos,
it just doesn't have to be recent, even, Ryan. It can be like even back to some of those Pat Fitzgerald years, like even when they were winning the Big Ten, they're always crazy.
Well, that's where the wounds of the 3-score fourth quarter comeback in 2023 to lose in overtime are fresh. But if I thought that was fresh, the Northwestern 38-point onslaught against the Gopher defense last year at Wrigley Field is also still in the forefront of my gigantic head. So in theory, with this being at home for Minnesota, with this being Senior Day for Minnesota, maybe a little bit extra emotion from guys such as Anthony Smith, Greg Johnson, Ashton Beers, et cetera, et cetera. The thing that I need to put across to people of maybe something I'm putting way too much stock in, Luke, this will be the 10th consecutive game for Northwestern. 10th. Oh,
yeah.
Why? Okay. That's a fair question. I'm glad you asked it. So the Wildcats bye week comes after week one this year. Why? because their administration is trying to buy as much time for a new Ryan Field to open as humanly possible. So that gigantic I don't even know how many $9-figure million stadium is going to open shortly after the bye week. But because of that, because you're trying to buy time, your bye week is so early in the season. And oh, by the way, can I interest you in three games prior to Northwestern coming to town to take on your Golden Gophers? Are you ready?
I am.
It is on the road at Autzen against the Oregon Ducks. They return home to take on the number 22 Iowa Hawkeyes. And then the week before they come into town on Senior Day, the Northwestern Wildcats take on the Ohio State Buckeyes at the Horseshoe. Sweet giblets and junipers, sweet Moses of Mary even. That is quite the schedule. And that is going to be the 3 weeks, which is going to be brutal heading in. In theory, this game, with where Northwestern's going to be at on their schedule and where the depth of that team is at, I feel for David Braun.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel for David Braun. I really do. But this game should not be close to me because of that. Because I think Minnesota, I mean, under Fleck has historically at least scored a lot of dang points against Northwestern, and I think they're going to do it again. Like, if this game was played in September, I'd feel differently about the outcome of this game. But because of when this game is played and after whom, too, very importantly, I think Minnesota goes out with a bang at home. 35-17 on Senior Day, 7-4.
35-17. I feel like, Ryan, you and I have been like sharing notes, but I know we haven't. How is this possible?
It pains me that you haven't even disagreed with a single thing I've said so far.
I don't know. I mean, maybe on the classification, I literally picked Minnesota 34-16.
Unbelievable.
Dan is our producer, kid, vouched for me. Yeah. It's in, I already filled in the sheet. You can't see the sheet. 34-16. Man, crazy.
Well, let's see if we end up the same here on Black Friday, because we all both right. have them at 7-4, which, oh, by the way, you would be over the win total at this point. You're playing with house money.
I am playing with house money. I'm drinking the maroon and gold Kool-Aid. Actually, I'm drinking. What was the Dinky Town Athletes drink? I'm
duck beer.
Maroon Madness. I am drinking the Maroon Madness right now.
There you go.
Okay. I think this is a coin flip game. I guess my first question for you is: Luke Fickell still the coach? I think so.
I'm going to lay this out one last time. I am infatuated with the drama around Wisconsin football this year, where 4 or 5 months ago, the Wisconsin athletic department, or just the University of Wisconsin-Madison, didn't have a president, chancellor, nor an athletic director. So they've now got, I believe, some of those positions filled, including their athletic director. But that's where I want to pose the question to you. There is a very plausible scenario that Wisconsin enters this game 6-5. And depending upon what you think about UCLA, I mean, those could be 6 wins against teams who don't make a bowl game. And if you lose this one to the Gophers for another, you know, if you lose to the Gophers again, what do you do with Luke Fickell at that point? Or if he slips up, because the other thing about Wisconsin this year is they go from one of the most difficult schedules that I can remember in 2025. Yeah. That thing was a gauntlet to, yeah, they start off with Notre Dame, and yeah, they have road games against Iowa and Kinnick, and they got to go to Happy Valley, but you get USC at home. And then their November is a complete, I mean, it is the cakewalk of cakewalks, with home against Rutgers, on the road at Maryland, on the road at Purdue.
Well, it's the bottom of the Big Ten.
Yes.
I think they could still lose games, right?
Yeah. I mean, that is the thing. Like, if whatever you are about Wisconsin and their increased commitment to NIL, now that they have taxpayers, the lovely people of Wisconsin paying $14 million a year to pay off the Wisconsin-Madison athletic debt, which they voted for it. That's what they get. Good for them. But that is to where I am just fascinated, because I think there is no team on the schedule this year for Minnesota where you're like, their opponent, like who they beat is so important within the context of what their record is, because that is what is going to save or potentially not save Luke Fickell's life, which then we get into the Jason Eck or the Jake Dickert era of Wisconsin Badgers football. But it is such a fascinating team to me. And that even part of that is like quarterback, because I think Gopher fans know it more than anybody. Like, by the time this game gets to be on the schedule, so many times here in the Fleck era, it's like, who's healthy for Wisconsin at quarterback? And that's where they spent like $2.5 million on an Old Dominion transfer by the name of Colton Joseph. Well, guess what? Colton Joseph does really well, because it's the theme of the season for Danny Collins. He runs the football pretty dang well, which is why he ran for over 1,000 yards and 13 rushing touchdowns last year. So that my question with Colton Joseph isn't today. Like in late August, no, I have no questions with him. How does his body look after 11 games in the Big Ten or playing against opponents that are playing in the Big, like, where is he at and what does the depth look like behind him? I mean, you've also got a Wisconsin team that's already dealing with offensive line injuries. Like, it is such a fascinating team to follow on a week-by-week basis this year, because the schedule is, I would say, all right, now again, this is very arguable. We'll see if it ends up playing out this way. Like, their schedule could be the easiest in the Big Ten. I've already laid out a lot of it. And you get Minnesota at home Friday night, Black Friday, because you got to take the Big Ten checks. And part of that is playing a cold game at Camp Randall. But it is, like, I am just infatuated with where is Luke Fickell coaching this game at the end of the year. I don't know the answer to that, but I would ask you, Luke, if they're 6-5 and your wins, okay, are against Western Illinois, Eastern Michigan, Michigan State, UCLA, and I'll say Rutgers, Maryland, and Purdue, okay? What are you doing?
Well, I don't even know if that matters as much as it's a new athletic director, right?
Is he going to want to get his own guy?
Yeah, exactly. He's going to want to get his own guy, and you know, it's put his stamp on the program. And I think that's the part that matters most. If I remember right, he's from like Texas Austin. Very curious to see what they end up doing. And to your point, if it goes sideways with this kind of schedule, it's very possible that he's not the coach, but I think he will be. Just financially, it probably doesn't make a lot of sense to part early, but I guess you could get ahead of it. It's in this new age. Let's get back to the game. So to the game and the prediction, you know, what do we say about rivalries? You know, throughout the records, it doesn't matter. They're always going to be close. I feel like field position is always a big one because it's weather, right? This game, like we think about last year's game with the snow, field position is going to matter. You just got to execute in the red zone and get touchdowns and not field goals. I will pick Minnesota 24-21.
That's a lot of points.
Thank you.
So you've got them at 8-4. Interesting. I will tell you, I have this 23-16 Minnesota. They've won 4 of the last 5. They have really won in the trenches during that time period, and they've gotten exponentially more consistent quarterback play too, which comes into, I've got pretty good faith in Drake Lindsey at this point, who will be on his 25th start as a Golden Gopher at that point. And I'm going to be, we'll see who's playing quarterback. If Colton Joseph, the runner himself, can hold up that long. I don't have as much trust in the trenches for Wisconsin than I do like Minnesota. Imagine someone saying that, by the way, 10 years ago, which is part of why we're sitting here talking about Luke Fickell's job status.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it just is what it is. So we both have him at 8-4. And before people click off, I need to get this disclaimer out there, because it's one of those things where you just heard us get to a win total, and we both have them in 8-4. But here's what I want to run by you, because the way I like to put this out into the ether here is, like, I want to think about it as a bell curve. Again, big math guy. And you think about, like, the outcome of distributions. Mm-hmm. And so I ultimately have to put, you know, my predictions out there. It's part of the gig. I'm not asking anybody to feel bad for me. But here's what I would tell you, Luke, before I actually list them off. I've got 5 different outcomes between 5-7 and 9-3, all of which have double-digit percentiles. Like, I think there are ceiling season opportunities. I think if you get an injury here or there, you are cooked. But it's just one of those things where I'll even tell you right now, like, I predicted 8-4. That is not my most likely outcome for this team, which is interesting. But do you agree with the thought process of the variance within outcomes for this Gopher football team is as wide as we've seen in some time?
I think that's possible, and I think that's in large part a function of just where we are with the Big Ten right now.
400%. Yes.
Yeah, the Big Ten is just so good. Okay, pressure test this take for you. Maybe this is my hot take.
Okay.
This might be the most talented roster that Minnesota has had. You could argue 2019, but in terms of overall depth, maybe we haven't seen it yet in the quarterback position, but this might be the most talented roster. But the results might not show, you might not see the results because the Big Ten is just that good.
I think that is true. I'm a little bit more hesitant about to say Minnesota has great depth. I think that is probably one of the hallmarks that House and I agree on, is I don't think they have great depth, especially on, like, the offensive and defensive lines. I really don't. Which is where, like, one more injury up front and this thing could cascade like it did last year, especially on the offensive side of the ball. But it's also so many of these games, and I listed 8 different coin flip games in my mind.
Yeah,
somewhere between 35% and 65% win probabilities, where if you continue to do what you've done in the Fleck era, which is have a pretty dang good outcome in those games, then yeah, 7, 8, 9 wins is right there. But if you come up on the short end of the stick like you did a few years ago and go 5-7, that's where you can see it coming back. And that's where I do want to list off here. Like, I think 5-7, 10%. 9-3, 15%. 6-6, 20%. 8-4, 25%. And 7-5, I was the most likely outcome, slightly at 30%.
Mm-hmm.
But that is, again, to where I'm trying to just convey, like, I picked in this specific episode and for this specific Gopher Gazette piece that you can go read. Again, I highly encourage you to do so. GopherGazette.com, support those who support us. Like, it's such an interesting season, because say you do get adequate special teams. Okay. You found a way to win 8 games last year with the worst special teams in the Big Ten. You found a way to win 8 games last year with the worst rushing offense in the Big Ten. Like, imagine you get a league average rushing game and you get a league average special teams output. Like, that is the biggest thing to me about this season, is I think the defense is a high floor. Like, you've got Anthony Smith, TJ Bush, Carter Menz, Maverick Baranowski, John Nestor, Kerry Brown, etc. But if you want the ceiling season to happen, it's going to have to be because the offense and special teams take that step where you don't lose games because your punt returner takes one off the shin inside the 10 and completely flips a game on its head.
Yeah.
Or you're able to make a 43-yard field goal, which, sweet, don't get me started. Now, again, we're believing in the Daniel DiPrato magic with that. Or, again, heaven forbid, I think about some of these recent Iowa games. Like, imagine you get a punt return touchdown for the first time, or a kick return touchdown for the first time. Luke, your children are now in elementary school, and they don't know what it's like to see a return touchdown. Like, that's how old we're getting here, is like these game-changing plays that seemingly go against Minnesota in these instances. What if they just get one kick or punt return touchdown, which can swing a game? Or you're able to make a 45-yard field goal instead of miss it, which can swing a game. But the number one most important thing, because everybody wants to hope and dream, and I get it. If you want to get to that 8-4, 9-3, 10-2, you need a run game. Like that is the bottom line here, because I am just adamant at this point that if the offense is going to take the next step, because I agree with you that in theory, Harbaugh has as much talent offensively as he's had with Greg Johnson, Ashton Beers, Nathan Roy up front. I think there'll be some, we'll get into the rotation potentially going on the right side of the offensive line. You've got a veteran NFL caliber tailback in Darius Taylor. You've got Drake Lindsey in year two. You've got pass catchers like Jalen Smith, Javon Tracy, Noah Jennings, etc. But if you want the entire offensive output to increase, and that is at the end of the day, points, yards, yards per play, you have to find a way to run the football. Because if you run the football, the play sheet for Harbaugh gets longer on second and six than it does second and 11. If you run the football, the second and third level of the defense actually have to respect you. And guess what? That is inherently going to make things easier for the tight ends and receivers in the passing game. And then you are going to have the opportunity to make more explosive plays. But that is the crux, is Harbaugh has not found a way consistently in his 3 years to run the football. He hasn't found a way.
Yep.
And hope would be Darius is healthy, or that TJ Thomas and AJ Turner or Ryan Estrada can then mix and match their way into a run game. Or, hear me out, the offensive line actually moves mass consistently, so it doesn't necessarily factor that the running back has to make a man miss every time. But if they can get just a league average offense, league average, okay, which would be like 27 to 29 points a game, you can start to dream a little bit, because none of these teams on the schedule are ones to where, even when you do go play Indiana, like I said, like you play them ninth consecutive game after they play Ohio State and Michigan. Mm-hmm. Like, you got a chip chair and a chance. And yeah, Washington, and you still have difficult, you have five ranked opponents on the schedule. But so much of it just comes down to the offense for me. If they can find a way to score more points than they have in the Harbaugh era, to go with Anthony Smith and these guys on defense, and just a pulse on special teams, you can see that you at least have the ingredients to make a run, which is ultimately what you need at the end of the day. Because it's like anything. And I say ingredients because, again, 245 pounds. I know my way around the kitchen a little bit. If you don't have good ingredients, you can't make good food.
Yeah,
like you just have what you have. And so if you want to have a good football team, you better have good coaches, good players, and you need to get a little bit of a break on the schedule. And I think you've got returning coordinators. You've got a returning quarterback. Like, you've got some high-end guys on the offensive and defensive lines. Like, you can talk yourself into, like, if it clicks, like really clicks, you can see that you at least have the ingredients to figure out a way to put it in the pan, and hopefully the outcome is something good.
I do feel like you made a really good point, is if you are going to have that ceiling season, you are going to have to be able to run the football. And if you, we alluded back to the 2019 season, you remember the frustrations that we had in those early season games before we knew how good this team could be. Man, were they adamant that they were going to run the football in those non-conference games, and it almost cost them, but they found that being able to run the ball is their identity with Mo, Shannon Brooks, and Rodney Smith. Like, you have to be able to run that football. And I frankly think that this quarterback is probably better.
Well, that's also part of the ceiling season discussion, is like,
yeah,
everybody wants, like, I get the question, you get the question, Harbaugh gets the question, Drake gets the question. I've asked them both this question. Mm-hmm. Like, what is the next step? If you want Drake Lindsey to take the next step, he needs to be able to have a run game to pair with. Like, he's got the arm talent and the physical capabilities, or even the mental capacity to understand what that means. Now, so much of that is him just handing the ball off, and he's got to trust in the running backs and scheme and the offensive line, yada, yada. But that's the next step for Drake Lindsey, truthfully, is let's give him a run game. And then, as the kids would say, just let him cook.
Yeah, like, let's also not kid ourselves too, that in those teams that we look back to when we say, man, some of those Joe Rossi defenses were really good. Well, they were good because of the function they could run the ball, and they could manage the clock.
Or like they were good too, because their offense was actually competent too, to where they could be opposing the offense that they were going against was in passing mode. And if you're in passing mode, I mean, that is the number one thing the Gopher defense wants to do this year.
Yep.
They want to throw out a passing down package of like Anthony Smith, TJ Bush, Carter Mens, Emmanuel Carmo, and just let those guys try to go get after the passer.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what they want to do. They don't want to sit out there with like three linebackers and try to stop the run, which is my biggest worry yet, is can Minnesota stop the run with a bunch of defensive tackles who have never played at a Big Ten level?
Well, that plus having the mobile quarterback.
Yeah.
They have a lot of mobile quarterbacks they're going to go against. So
again, that's where if you have a run game and you score more points, yada, yada, like you're probably going to be playing from ahead as an offense, which means you can run the ball more. But it also means for Danny Collins' defense, which their strength is going to be getting after the passer, you're playing to the strength of your defense, which is playing to the strength of your team. Like it all goes hand in hand, which is why I think the thought process, rather than just like you and I predicting games, is so much more fascinating, because it all just ties together of like, what if you get competent, like from all three levels? Because we've seen them win 7-8 games without that. Now imagine if it does click.
Yeah.
Then what happens?
Well, it's just really fun to talk about games and talk, even if we're prognosticating. And it's going to be really fun to break down games. It's going to be fun to preview games.
Yep.
I'm stoked. The whole YouTube angle is going to be interesting for us this year. as you force me into this, me as a very conservative technology person, you know,
who people came up to on Wednesday night, and I had three different people say, and I only think one of them was joking, that you truly do have a face for radio.
Thank you.
And I was I just try to be truthful to the people. I understand that my wife is the only one that is like thinks I look pleasant. And guess what? That's enough for me. I'm comfortable enough in my own skin, but Luke, we're going to have to work on that beard of yours is what I think we're going to.
Yeah. It's a little unhinged at the moment. Kind of busy. Keep forgetting about it. It's low on my priority list. So we'll work on it. But more importantly, thank you guys for listening. It's been a very fun off season. We were a little bit more active. We were especially more active here in July and August. You can get ready now. It's going to be two a week. We're in game in season mode. It's going to be fun.
And we'll be back Monday to preview EIU. And then guess what? You get live Gopher football ahead of Labor Day weekend.
I, as a fan, am excited for your instant reaction YouTube stuff. You and Dan are going to do. I'm ready for that.
This year on the YouTubes.
Yeah, I'm excited for that. More content if you're a Gopher fan. Again, thank you for listening, and go Gophers.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane. Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I always on television watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton. But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 weeks in August is finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.